Hi, everyone. Welcome to the podcast. I'm here today with a guy who goes by the name Walt Bismarck. Walt, how would you describe yourself to the audience?
Hey, so I was a minor e-celeb a few years ago in the alt-right movement of, I guess, 2015 to 2018. I was somewhat renowned for making racist Disney parodies. I was a pretty major figure on YouTube at the time and on Twitter. But I guess I more or less dropped off the face of the earth right before the alt-right started to take a nosedive, right before Charlottesville in 2017. And I guess since then, I've been more or less a non-entity. But I decided to come back recently because I thought I could make some intellectual contributions. And I guess I went viral on Twitter a little while ago for an essay I wrote describing why I am no longer a white nationalist. I've been on Substack for a few weeks now, and I've put out a few essays that have gotten a pretty good reception. And I guess I was very much inspired by your recent work, Richard. I think that you've definitely defined, you know, the right approach to staying within the Overton window and being able to influence, you know, public discourse in a productive way. And I think that I think that I can kind of contribute to the same sort of discourse in the same vein. So I guess that's the best way to describe myself.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So this Disney parody thing, you know, I never got into the whole meme thing. I was always an essay guy. So I always read essays or wrote essays. But a lot of people I knew were really into these Disney parodies. And I've just watched or rewatched a few of them, today. How did this idea get in your mind to do this?
I basically stole it from Gamergate. So there was the Gamergate movement had a bunch of Disney parodies that were basically, you know, saying there shouldn't be any like lesbians or, you know, black women in video games or whatever. It was a, you know, very kind of lowbrow sort of thing. But I saw that the idea had a lot of potential. And, you know, at the time I was getting inspired to become a white nationalist. And I guess I figured that Disney has a lot of emotional currency with millennials, especially late millennials, people who grew up in the 90s. You know, there were a lot of those Disney movies that came out around the time were essentially Broadway musicals in terms of their thematic structure. And a lot of the songs within them had a lot of potential for being sort of like you could convert kind of the I guess, emotional thrust of a song or the thematic thrust of a song into something that, I mean, really anything you want. But, you know, at the time I was really getting into white nationalism and the alt-right. So I sort of used that as my inspiration. So I started off, I was spending a lot of time, I guess you could say I came from 4chan. I was coming out of kind of like the libertarian, the sort of racist libertarian crowd, you could call it. You know, there were a lot of people who were coming out of the Ron Paul 2012 campaign, who got into HBD, who got into Hans Hermann Hoppe and Neo Reaction and, you know, the Pinochet, the helicopter memes, everything like that, sort of crystallized on a blog called The Right Stuff. And I guess around that time, that was sort of where my intellectual trajectory was. I was being very influenced by Jared Taylor and Ram Dipal and Ryan Falk, a lot of those figures on YouTube. So I guess, you know, I this was in 2015, right after Trump first announced. And, you know, he had come down his golden escalator and he had really energized this kind of nascent alt-right movement. And I guess I wanted to make a contribution, and I thought that memes would be a way to reach a younger audience, reach kind of a more middle-brow to low-brow audience on 4chan and other platforms, and in doing so, disseminate a lot of ideas from, I guess, the sort of alt-right intelligentsia, people like Richard Spencer, Greg Johnson, Jared Taylor, in a way that people could understand. So I could use a familiar structure, like a Disney song, to kind of communicate those sort of more sophisticated ideas. And I mean, at the time, it blew up very quickly. I got a great reception. Obviously, you know, this was in 2015 when the alt-right was, you know, an incredibly vital movement. We had a great deal of energy. I mean, it definitely, I think, contributed to establishing some of the like outreach tactics and communicative norms of the alt-right in the early days. And definitely sort of made a mark on the movement. But I would say around kind of mid-2016, that's when I sort of became less prolific, because I guess at that juncture, the alt-right was starting to become a bit more I guess, normie friendly, or it was starting to appeal more to, I guess, like heritage conservatives, more sort of temperamentally conservative people, more traditional Republicans. I should say, a big part of the alt-right in the early days was that, you know, most people in it were temperamentally quite liberal, or they you know, came from a progressive background. There were people who, high openness, low conscientiousness, very, very low agreeableness, the sort of people who are natural dissidents, natural contrarians. In 2016, the sort of median alt-righter became much more of a traditional conservative, or now sort of the prototypical Trump voter. So, you know, around that time, I started to contribute less to the movement. I felt like I didn't have, I guess, as much to say to that sort of person. I was kind of more interested in metapolitical theorizing. I was in my memes. I pushed a lot of ideas like expanding the Overton window. Don't punch right. No enemies to the right. A lot of these ideas that were intended to.
It was censorship too, right? Because your Disney parodies, they were just on YouTube, weren't they? Back then, you could just put that stuff on YouTube, couldn't you?
Yeah. Well, it would kind of go up and down. Like YouTube had periods of more intense censorship where they would take a lot of more spicy content down, right? But like it kind of went up and down throughout the years. And I think this was a time when the censorship was relatively lax.
Yeah. And then that changed when Trump won. I remember there were purges very soon after that. And they realized, oh no, we have to do something else. And then after Charlottesville, there was the censorship just went into overdrive. And so, yeah, it was a different time. It was sort of a free for all. So what's made you come back? I mean, that was 2017, 2018. We're here 6 years later. Why now? I mean, is it a personal reason, or is there something going on in the world that's got you interested, or what?
Yeah, I think there were several factors. Number one, I definitely wanted to tell my own story of how I sort of de-radicalized from white nationalism. And I think I felt kind of an urge to speak to a lot of guys from back in that era who, you know, they probably still emotionally identify as a white nationalist, or they, you know, think of themselves as they have like lingering alt-right sentiments, from that era. But I think that as I personally have, I guess, become more of a I guess you could say a normal person. And you know, I rereading your own, I guess, repudiation of your past, I guess there's certain aspects of that, you know, like not being an incel anymore, like being more successful with women in my career. I mean, there were a lot of like similar chords that struck with me. I guess I related to a lot of that. So I sort of wanted to continue in the tradition you would establish and kind of come back and sort of establish a permission structure psychologically for other people who used to be in the alt-right to sort of, I guess, reevaluate, you know, where they stand in the current political landscape.
Yeah.
Because I feel like a lot of the things that motivated us to become white nationalists in 2015 are no longer salient. Like for instance, in 2012 to 2015, you heard a lot of talk about the emergent Democratic majority. Hispanic and Asian immigration.
Why bring back? Why resurrect the alt-right name? Because if you want to get away from white nationalism, you're saying you want an alt-right 2.0. That's it is white nationalism. But you take out the white nationalism, you don't have alt-right anymore.
I don't think the alt-right was alternative or because it was white nationalist is the thing. I think the alt-right was alternative because it was a different sort of person who was attracted to it. I think that it's that sort of being temperamentally high openness, low conscientiousness, low agreeableness that I was talking about. I think it's somebody who's a little autistic, a little nerdy, a little artsy, just a little different, looks at the world from a different perspective. That's what made us alternative. It wasn't just the fact that we were. This is a point I make in my article. Trying to bring back the alt-right and an alt-right 2.0. Normie conservatives are quite what you would call racist, right? I mean, like it's very common for, like we all have a dad who's like loves to watch videos of some conservative black guy who blasts other guys, black guys for being thugs or something, right? I mean, like that's a very common. It's very common for conservatives to be racist in a very unsystematic and incoherent way, but then they'll I guess like worship any black conservative who agrees with them, right? It's a very sort of like non-serious, non-systematic approach to their racial identity. The alt-right was only different because we were systematizing it. We were like I think the average alt-righter was in many ways less prejudiced temperamentally than the average kind of.
Yeah, I think that's a good point because they would be like, I mean, there was political scientists who were always like, oh, especially during the Obama era, this was a cottage industry. Look, racist views predict opposition to Obama, predict Republican politics. And like mainstream right back then would just deny this. Like if you put a National Review or something, they would just say, no, racist has nothing to do with it. But I remember a lot of the alt-right people would say, no, it's real. You all are very racist and just live up to your racist ideals, right?
Yeah.
And that was that was something they did. You're right. There was this but there also was, I don't know if that's actually completely right, because they would be to be systematized is like the, you know, that's a qualitative difference, and it's not just like a different, it's something different on the spectrum. So like a religious fundamentalist comes by and says your people are just sort of religious in this sort of unthinking way, the religious fundamentalist comes along and says no, live by your religion, but it's different than that
because you have reached the end of the free recording for this episode of Clown Car. To listen to the rest of the episode, please consider becoming a paid subscriber.